Hi there. That was Willie the Pimp from Hot Rats. And say hello here. Let's check your vocal level.
Good evening. Good evening.
This is Mr. Tom Brown.
How are you?
How you doing, Tom?
Happy Veterans Day.
Yes, happy Veterans Day. I played the governor's message to veterans, which was basically to say that veterans need jobs when they come back from their service.
And they need some help when they come back with severed limbs as well.
But they don't get much after after they get their prosthetic limb.
No.
But they get money. Get money, and it's probably nowadays probably in the range of about $3,600 a month or something like that.
I'm not really sure.
It's going to be, back in the NOM days, they got $1,800 a month. But hey, in 1970, $1,800 lasted a long time.
Exactly. That was good dollars.
Yeah. But in 2011, $1,800 would probably not even pay your rent.
Exactly.
Yes. So I think it's about $3,600 now. But still.
Yes.
For what? What do they lose those limbs for?
Well, most of the time it seems like absolutely nothing to me. Absolutely nothing. There's no sound reason. It's insanity.
Tom Brown is a guy that I know Tom because he had a heart attack.
Thank you.
Back in 1994. Now this, you didn't have your heart attack at the time of the earthquake, did you?
No.
The Northridge earthquake.
No.
It was the week before or something like that?
Or after, I think.
It was the week after?
I think so.
Okay.
Mercifully.
That would have been a weird place to be in an earthquake. But anyway, I was then hired to fill in for Tom Brown in customer service at Rhino Records back in February of 1994 because Tom was hospitalized.
That's correct.
And as catastrophic as that had to have been to your body, it got you to stop smoking cigarettes.
That's true.
Which you had done for decades.
That's true.
You know. And it gave you a new lease on life, right?
I changed my diet and the whole number, and it's a new world. And I have had no relapse whatsoever, so I'm pleased.
So everything's different. You in fact, had insurance from Rhino.
I did.
Yeah.
I did.
You were fortunate.
Yes, very fortunate.
Yes. Actually, for all of the negative things that both of us could say about Rhino Records.
That's true.
Rhino was good to both of us in ways, too.
So, absolutely. Absolutely. You know? And the health insurance was top flight.
Mm-hmm.
It barely cost me anything out of my pocket. And I was taken care of. Thank you.
It was a beautiful thing. Beautiful time.
For a minute there.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, Tom and I then worked together after that, and I worked at Rhino from 94 to 98. And in 97 and 98, I actually became a full-time Rhino Records employee.
That's right, and you did a fine job too, Bennett.
Well, thank you very much, until I got fired.
Well,
we
all got fired.
Yes, and I got fired. I was told, who was that? What was the name of that doofus? What was that guy who was running our department?
David Dorn.
No. The one with the weird name.
Bunshaft. I can't make that up.
Imagine that. Bunshaft. Mr. Bunshaft fired me by telling me.
Excuse me.
That I cared too much. We don't have a cough button on this, on this board. But I cared too much. That was why I was being fired, because I guess I took things too personally.
Well, I came to your defense as much as I possibly could, but as you know, Bunshaft was the big cheese, even though he wasn't qualified.
Not at all.
For any of it. Nope. At all, other than he was a corporate business weasel type, and they
were paying him like $150,000.
Yeah, I know. That was scary.
Yeah. But, it took, for me, it took being at Rhino to actually come to grips with being in California. so that I actually – my life went in a different direction because I worked at Rhino, so I appreciate that. In your case, you were eventually canned, though you had a sweet deal too with that. How long was that, 3 years?
Yes.
3 years of full pay.
And health benefits.
Thank you. Amazing. And
well,
that's where
almost 20 years. Come on.
Well, it's true. There was a time when there were only like three or four people working for Rhino, and you were one of them, right?
That's right. There were five of us when I began.
Yeah.
So there you go. Early days.
Hey, I did want to ask, is Reggie still working for Rhino?
Yes, he's the only one out of the old fold that is still there.
And he's an A&R?
He's doing research for rights, I believe.
Oh, he's in the legal department then, probably.
Well, I'm not exactly sure. But well, I know he's not having a whole lot of fun, and, you know, it's not like the old days. And
oh, it wasn't.
Even the old days wasn't like the old days, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Well, the last few weeks that I was there, Rhino was turning into something. Was turning into a corporate megapolis.
Yeah,
is what
it
was
really
turning
hideous.
Into. Yeah.
That when I was finally terminated, I was terminated for insubordination.
Ooh, what'd you do?
Which I'm proud of.
Yeah.
I told this woman that they had put in charge of the department there, put her above me. What was her name? Sonia Smith.
Sonia became the head of the department after Bunchap?
Next level down, yeah. But we had to report to Sonia. Everybody had to report to Sonia. And
Sonia was the one who actually got me fired.
Ah, yeah. I'm not surprised. Yeah. And I just said a few impolite things as honestly as I could, because that's the way I saw it and that's the way I felt. And it didn't go over so well. They put me on probation. And intimidated me into having to go. I actually went to one company meeting out of my entire 20 years.
Thomas Ferrati was another Zug's drummer.
There we go. I knew it.
Yeah, yeah. So Thomas is listening, and he's saying hello. Oh, and turn Tom's mic up is what he says.
Oh, my
so
God.
So maybe you should lean in a little closer.
Oh.
You sound fine in my ears.
Okay.
So, but I guess we do want you to be audible.
Yes, I can hear me. Thank you, Tom.
And look, somebody just became a new follower of my podcast on Podomatic.
That's my beautiful wife.
That's Ray Lynn Gard.
That's right. Ray Lynn Shepherdson, actually.
Okay.
To me.
Raylan Shepherdson?
She was Raylan Shepherdson when I knew her, when she was 11 years old and I was 12. Those were the days.
Whoa.
How's that?
No. The first thing I want to do, I want to read from the book. No, the first thing I want to do is smoke a joint. Tom has brought some God's gift that he's rolled up. Actually, I was going to bring papers.
I'm going to share this with Bennett, baby.
And we both have prescriptions.
That's right. We're legal. And since we have downtime right now, we don't want too much dead air. But just in case my publisher in Connecticut is listening, Scott Parker. Thank you, Scott. What can I say, man?
He believed in you.
He did. He's been very, very nice about the whole matter. I could not believe how easy it has been with him.
He's your editor as well?
No. Nope. He took the book as is, but it had been edited to a fairly well for years. You know, I'd pitched the book around with no success whatsoever. You know, many, many rejections. And then I went out and got the endorsements, which I'm very proud of, and that didn't seem to matter too much either. They liked my endorsements, but they still didn't want to touch my book. Plus, I'm not a celebrity. It's a memoir. They don't do well. Too many words for a non-celebrity author, and blah, 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 and it goes on and on and on. And I lucked out, and Scott saw some of my... Zappa pieces on Zappateers. And we were off.
That's fantastic.
And I have the book, and we want everyone out there who might be a left-wing commie pinko type to go and take a look at this book. Go to my website, please, summeroflovemyass.com. There's a free chapter posted, and you might be intrigued by the story. If you're the type of person who could never imagine yourself in the military or participating in any sort of ritual close to that, you will love this book. This book will speak to you. That's all I can tell you. Everyone else, the right wingers, all those Republicans, all the guys that listen to Fox News will hate it.
And I like that.
I do too. It's fine by me. It's fine by me.
I want to also add that Tom had a list of songs that he requested. And so we're actually going to listen to the first song on the list right now.
I'll be damned.
While we smoke the rest of this joint. So here comes Lyndon Johnson.
I speak tonight for the dignity of man and the destiny of man. I urge every man of both parties. A long time ago, yes, I should have quit you, baby, a long time ago. You know I wouldn't be here now, people, down on the killing floor. If I'd have listened to my second mind, yes, if I had listened my second mind, you know I wouldn't be here now, people, down on the killing floor. We'll be right back.
Wow, that's the electric flag.
Ooh, psychedelic.
Psychedelic and killing floor from Long Time Coming. And we are now going to let Mr. Tom Brown is going to read from his book, Summer of Love, My Ass. I'm going to, I probably am going to bring up some crickets under you while you...
How appropriate is that?
Exactly. Exactly.
How appropriate is that?
I'm rewinding the tape.
All right. Well,
anyway, from Summer of Love, My Ass, here's Tom Brown.
All right. Let me set this up by saying I was literally kidnapped by the government and installed on a bus at the induction center after 3 days in a row going down there because I was so uncooperative. And they stuck me on a bus with nothing but volunteers, enlistees. They wanted to do this, and there I was, the only draftee, which they announced to them, of course, and they hauled me off to boot camp, and I spent a couple of days at an interim barracks. Didn't have so much fun there at all. I don't want to give anything away, and I'm gonna start when we get to boot camp, my first day at boot camp. Where I didn't want to be, but I didn't want to go to jail, and I was attempting to scheme an idea to get away. The bus began to slow down, and to our immediate right, I noticed that there were several DIs standing on a grassy knoll next to one of the barracks complexes. They appeared to be waiting for us. The bus pulled to a stop in front of them, the door opened, and in an instant, the demon drill sergeants were on the bus. One on the front and one on the side. They appeared to be very pissed off about something, and the one in the front of the bus began screaming at us in a thunderous pitch. Get your faggot asses off this bus and fall in columns of four in the foreyard. I glanced over to the only foreyard in our eye line and spied yet another two drill sergeants awaiting our arrival. This was very ugly. Now, move it on the double. Don't be the last man off this bus or your world will be shit. All hell broke loose as adrenaline and sheer terror seemed to permeate the air. It was absolutely insane. The volunteers would have trampled their own mother and little sister to get off that bus. Fortunately for me, I was seated very near the side door and did not have to be concerned about being the last one in the formation as I managed to evacuate the premises easily. Even I knew this was not the time to make an attempt to have any sort of rational conversation with the demons. In fact, I think I must have been in sort of a psycho shock state as I began to laugh as I struggled to tote the goddamn duffel bag to the foreyard along with the rest of the terrified victims. The drill sergeants continued to maliciously harangue us all, and several of them had taken kicking the volunteers in the seat of their army fatigues if they were deemed to be moving too slow. As we approached the foreyard, the two awaiting DIs were already in full tirade mode and were screaming and spitting in the randomly picked volunteers' faces as they were attempting to dress the useless formation. Your mommy won't be able to help you here, maggot. Drop and give me 20 and sound off. This meant that you were required to perform 20 push-ups, counting out loud. The louder, the better is what they were looking for. And after each one was concluded, one of the volunteers was ordered to crawl on his belly like a reptile across the foreyard and back, all the while the demon screamed at him to put his face in the dirt and grass. He did, and when his task was completed, there were bloodied scratches that covered his face as he literally not raised his head as he was slithering in the dirt. He looked terrified as the demon continued his verbal assault. I'd never seen anything like this in my life. Before or since. Holy shit. It didn't take me long to have my first face-to-face encounter with one of the demons. The ranting psychotic was not 4 inches from my face, spitting and fuming. What's this mess on your face, maggot? I'd forgotten the shaving ritual since my arrival at Ord, and I assumed that's what he was referring to. It's my face, Sergeant, I said firmly, but purposely not shouting. As you must have noticed by now, I have a serious problem with this authority figure stuff. It didn't really matter how anyone answered anyway. Even if someone could miraculously come up with the correct answer, it would be wrong. It was a no-win situation. Of course, the demons would argue that this display of moronic psych games would not only instill discipline and character, it would somehow lead to producing a better soldier. A better soldier, perhaps, if you were willing to submit to their will and exist without having any independent thoughts. But there was no one anyway. But there was no way anyone could appease the demons at this point. They had a license to be raving psychotic assholes, and they were generously offering us a perfect performance. And it mattered not if I perceived it to be absolutely insane. You smart-ass maggot, drop and give me 20, and you better sound off like you've got a pair. You insignificant piece of dog shit. Now! I was beyond reluctance, but I had to swallow my pride yet once again and comply with the demon maniac to avoid a beating and or jail penalty. Passive-aggressive, if you will. I assumed the position and began the ridiculous ritual, all the while the demon severely admonished me to count louder. I can't hear you, maggot. You better sound off or your worthless ass will be down there all day. 4, 5, 6. This was definitely rubbing me the wrong way, and I was feeling more helpless than ever, as I had absolutely no alternate plan to make this unwanted harassment disappear from my life. I continued and completed the involuntary push-ups. On your feet, maggot. The next time I see you in my formation, you will be clean-shaven. Is that understood? Before I could even respond, he had noticed something else and pounced on my soul yet again. Where are your dog tags, Private Brown? Don't you know that military law requires you to wear your dog tags at all times? Where are your fucking dog tags? You never take them off. Are you a fucking retard? Do I have a fucking retard in my platoon? I was obviously not making a good first impression with my newly appointed caretakers. They're in my pocket, Sergeant, I screamed. Not because I was attempting to comply with their bizarre expectations, but because I hated the son of a bitch that was standing 4 inches from me attempting to break the sound barrier with spittle emanating from the grotesque hole that served as his mouth. I was wondering if there was an actual death chant that you could recite to rid oneself from an unwanted assault, and decided to look into it when I had a chance. I desperately needed some serious cosmic voodoo shit to intervene. Get them out and put them on, Private Brown. As I reached in my pocket to retrieve the meaningless ornament and obey my noble drill sergeant's command. And don't forget that while I was engaged with my particular demon, the other three were enacting their own version of Hell on Wheels all around us. Unmercifully, there was no shortage of screaming and psycho-ranting, push-ups, double-timing around the foreyard, facing the dirt around the foreyard. But the degradation and humiliation they were inflicting on us did not strike fear into me in the manner they intended it to. I was afraid, to be sure, but every ugly moment strengthened my resolve to somehow avoid this at all costs. Almost. Was I ready to take a stand in the stockade? Not quite yet. You are a fuck-up, aren't you? I don't like fuck-ups. I hate fuck-ups. You know what I do with fuck-ups like you? How do you respond to something like that? But I probably said no, Sergeant, as I was putting the goddamn dog tags on. I signed them to KP for their entire first week of boot camp. How does that sound to you, asshole? KP? Kitchen police? And to tell you the truth, it immediately sounded preferable to me than running up and down the hills of Fort Ord with the demons in wrathful pursuit. You are in a world of shit, Private Brown. Do you know what this means? It means that after your week in the mess hall, you'll be performing double time all next week to make up for the training that you've missed, won't you? Uh-oh. He pointed to his right toward a rectangular complex at the end of the barracks 50 yards away. Report to the mess hall, now, on the devil. Move your ass, I can't stand to look at you anymore. Believe me, the feeling was mutual. I gathered my duffel back and proceeded in my attempt to tote it double time to the mess hall. I actually began laughing as I was making my way. I thought,
I'm losing my fucking mind already. Why am I laughing like a crazy man? This is not funny. Not even a little.
John is in a basement mixing up the medicine. I'm on a pavement thinking about the government. The man in a trench coat, batch out laid off, says he's got a bad cough, wants to get it paid off. Look out, kid, it's something you did. God knows when, but you're doing it again. You better duck down the alleyway looking for a new friend. The man in a coonskin cap in a pig pen wants $11 bills. You only got 10. Maggie comes fleet-foot, face full of black soot, talking at the heat, put plants in the bed, but the phone's tapped anyway. Maggie says the men say they must bust an early man, orders from the DA. Look out, kid, don't matter what you did, but walk on your tiptoes, don't tie no bows. Better stay away from those that carry around a fire hose. Keep a clean nose, wash the clean clothes. You don't need a weatherman to know which way the wind blows. Oh, get sick, get well, hang around an inkwell, hang bell, hard to tell if anything is gonna sell. Try hard, get bought, get back, ride rail, get jail, jump bail, join the army if you fail. Look out, kid, you're gonna get hit by losers, cheaters, six-time users, hanging around the theaters. Girl by the whirlpools, looking for a new fool, don't follow leaders, or watch your parking meters. Oh, get born, keep warm, short pants, romance. Learn to dance, get dressed, get blessed. Tired of these success, please her, please him. Buy gifts, don't steal, don't live. 20 years of schooling and they put you on a day shift. Look out, kid, they keep it all hid. Better jump down a manhole, light yourself a candle. Don't wear sandals, try to avoid the scandals. Don't want to be a bum, you better chew gum. The pump don't work cause the vandals took the handle.
So that was part. Come on. Yeah, stupid microphones. Cheap kill radio. That was an excerpt from chapter 3.
That's correct. And the entire chapter is free online at the website, summerofloveMyAss.com.
And Tom, in order to get this published, sent this manuscript to several different people, and they wrote comments.
Endorsements. What they call endorsements, yes.
So this is an endorsement from Pete Seeger.
Yes.
Who is a person that I play on here a lot and talk about a lot.
Great man.
If you want a frank, uninhibited account of a young American male who did not want to join the U.S. Army and go to Vietnam, this book is for you. Good read. Haskell Wexler wrote, H.T. Brown has written a dramatic personal book. A 60s bumper sticker says, question authority. Summer of Love does this with searing honesty and ironic humor. No question, Summer of Love will make an exciting, dramatic movie. Your life is a history lesson which can give younger people understanding of today's erasure of the Vietnam syndrome. I've already thought as well that this is probably a movie. Hello? Hello? Yeah, my mic just died.
Yeah. I should have just butted in there and taken over, but...
Well, I can do this. So, but my microphone just died. Anyway, what was I saying?
Haskell.
I think there's a real possibility of a movie. Have you gotten this to any actors?
No.
You know, that's where it should go next, is get it to some young actors who have some clout. I'd say Sean Penn, but he's 50 now.
Exactly. All the really, really good ones are you know,
it'll have to be one of those doofuses from the Twilight movies or something.
No. I know. I was kidding with my wife about Justin Bieber.
Yes, there we go.
Exactly. I don't mean that, though. Please don't take me seriously.
You also have a quote here from Howard Zinn. H.T. Brown's idiosyncratic memoir is both funny and serious, intensely personal while illuminating important facets of our system of justice in and out of the military. It is both troubling and instructive. Howard fucking Zinn.
Thank you, Mr. Zinn. Very nice man.
I fell over
when he replied.
So you sent, again, was I correct? You sent him the manuscript?
I sent him chapters along with the synopsis.
Uh-huh.
So he didn't read the entire book. But, I mean, you know, you don't really have to get the idea. I think you can tell if someone can write or if they're conveying an idea or an image.
Well, how long did it take you to write this?
Yeah, it actually took me about 4 years.
Uh-huh. I remember when you started it.
Yeah, lots of research. Lots of research. And I made 2 trips in the interim back to Fort Ord with my good friend John Livesey, which is the picture on the cover. That's actually the Fort Ord stockade. And I'm actually wearing one of my prisoner shirts that I made off with out of there.
I did know that you'd spent time in the stockade.
Yes. I hate to give anything away.
But you did mention that when we were working together. So
yes.
I knew that you had spent time.
I had a couple of court martials, and I spent almost a year. Which is not as bad as a lot of those guys had it.
Yeah.
I mean, the guys who you know, burned their draft card initially first on when the movement first started. And they wound up doing 4 years in federal prison. So I'll take a year in the stockade, but it wasn't fun. It still wasn't fun.
Anyway, I can't really, you know.
Let's talk about fun stuff.
Let's talk about fun stuff.
We'll have to.
Well, then, another aspect. That is a big part of H.T. Brown's life is a gentleman named Frank Zappa.
Indeed, yes. Yeah, he's my guy, you know.
And around the same time, well, it was after Freak Out that all this happened, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, Freak Out you'd gotten when it was relatively new.
Yes, almost brand new.
Almost brand new.
Yeah.
I recently got this mono copy of Freak Out, so I, you know, reinvigorated myself with the album, and I did some readings into it and how it got how quickly it was recorded in 6 days in March of 66 and all this. I even suspect that it actually predates Blonde on Blonde in release. Blonde on Blonde, even though Columbia has listed it as a May 15th release since the 60s, there was a harpsichord overdub on Fourth Time Around that was done in June. And the album didn't chart until July. So it probably didn't get released until like July 1st or something like that. And I suspect that because Tom Wilson had a background with Bob Dylan.
Yes.
And had left. Evidently, the falling out was over like a Rolling Stone. Something like that.
I can't.
You don't know anything about that.
I don't know enough about it.
But my only point is that Wilson, I guess he still was based in New York after that, but he did come out here to California to sign Zappa and the Mothers and record the album. And I suspect that because there is a Tom Wilson connection between the two albums, that's why somebody at Columbia decided to say that it was released first so that they can say Blonde on Blonde was the first rock and roll double album. When, in fact,
that's not true.
Freak Out came out first.
Yes, it did.
Freak Out came out by mid-June, I think.
I can't recall exactly, but I was a witness, and I certainly remember vividly seeing Freak Out in the stores a while before Blonde on Blonde.
Okay, that's exactly it. This is something that I discussed in my Freak Out show.
Yes,
because you know, I'm also a big Dylan guy. And so this just is a curiosity to me that, you know, it's meaningless, but it's fun.
Yes, indeed.
All this stuff is fun. Tom actually in Venice for years had what I've always referred to as the Zappa Museum.
Thank you.
And I simply couldn't believe all the things that you had, all the photos.
I know, it's pretty stupid, isn't it?
I'm jumping. Well, in the time that we worked together at Rhino, which was about 4 years or so,
yeah,
you were in a pretty bleak spirit.
Yes.
Forgive me for bringing up dark things, but you had said that since both your parents had died by the time they were 60, you did not expect to live past 60.
I said that?
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. I did list you as a cynic.
You know? All right. That's appropriate.
There's a side of that.
Yeah.
But you did the most amazing thing. You met Ray Lynn. You re-met Ray Lynn.
Yes. Yes, we hadn't seen each other in almost 40 years, something like that. Unbelievable.
So
we lost track inexplicably of one another.
You were neighbors when you were kids, or
no? Just, we went to school together,
just in the same school.
Yeah.
So 11.
Better in junior high.
11 and 12, so 7th, 8th grade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
7th, 8th, 9th grade.
Yeah.
Some of 10th grade.
And were you a couple during those days?
Yes.
Yeah. Cool.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not all the way through, because I chased.
12.
I know, I was 12. I chased a lot of girls, and Ray Lynn will never let me forget it. And I'm sorry, baby. I was 12 years old, 13 years old. I'm better now.
Well, then I'm going to ask, how did you reconnect?
I actually stumbled across classmates, and I noticed that I could leave my name without giving them any money, because I wasn't going to give them any money.
First, I searched me as well.
So first, yeah. I searched the site for Ray Lynn, and she wasn't to be found.
So she's been in your head,
yes,
all these years.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. I missed Ray Lynn, so I left my name on there, because you could do that for free, just your name.
Yes,
and it took 2 months, and I came home from work, and there was an email saying, Ray Lynn Gard has left you a message. And I went on Classmates, and of course, we can't connect. She can't receive my message until I give them my money, which I did instantly. Yeah. No problem at all. Yeah. I was glad to.
Yeah.
And we exchanged emails, and it went from there. And here we are, and we're married, and we're senior citizens, and we're having a pretty good time in spite of not being, well, like everyone else, not being as secure financially as we'd like to be.
Yeah.
Just like everyone else.
Everybody's broke.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Is she retired?
Excuse me. She has been for a while.
Uh-huh.
She had a pretty good job at City Hall. She was executive secretary to the city manager there, which is a pretty good gig.
Which city? Los Angeles?
Rancho Santa Margarita, excuse
okay.
me.
Okay.
And we were going to move into a house. So I put all my stuff in storage, all the Zappa Museum and the whole number. It's all in it. It's been in a storage unit for well over a year now.
Uh-huh.
We were going to move into a house. She got laid off 2 months later, and we're working on it.
So you're in an apartment right now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I moved into her apartment because she couldn't find a comparable job in my area.
Uh-huh. Well, are you receiving any kind of pension or anything? I know you wouldn't.
Social Security.
Social Security.
I'm an old guy, man.
Yeah.
Got the Medicare card, got the Social Security, got my senior citizens discount card at Albertsons.
For what do you, I shouldn't ask that question. I was going to ask how much you're making on Social Security. I don't even know. I think my dad gets $1,800 or something.
Well, that's more than I'm getting.
Yeah.
That's more than I'm getting.
But I think he's a vet too. So,
yeah.
Well, he is a vet. So, and you're a stockade.
Yes, they don't give me any money for resisting, even though they stole 22 months of my life, you know, and gave me a bad time.
Now, what about this? This book?
Yes.
I mean, obviously, when Rob Pattison signs up to do the movie, you'll get $300,000 or something. But
well, I'm prepared to accept it. I am prepared to accept it. I won't even negotiate too much. I'm an easy go right now.
But this is you'll get royalties? Or are you getting anything like that?
I will theoretically be receiving royalties, yes.
How many copies were printed?
I have no idea. I didn't even ask. Please don't tell me. I don't know. Probably more than enough that we're going to sell immediately, since it's so difficult to get the word out there, which is why we're here speaking, Bennett.
That's what we're
although
here
it
for.
Is wonderful to see you again.
Yeah, it sure is. It's great to see you.
It's been a long time. But, hoping for the best. You know, the publisher is so small. I mean, I don't have a publicist. I have absolutely no help whatsoever. It's me.
Right.
He's on the East Coast, but, you know.
Waterbury, Connecticut.
Yes, Waterbury, Connecticut.
I've been to Waterbury.
Yes, and they just had a horrible blizzard the last couple of weeks. He didn't have a telephone or internet service for a week.
I believe there are not there in Connecticut, but there are other places that are still powerless.
Probably.
From that was 2 weeks ago, I think.
Yes. It's intermittent.
What does this sell for?
$15 on the publisher's site, $17.99 on Amazon.
That's a good price.
It's a lot of words. It's a story. It's a real book. If you don't like reading, stay away from the book, because there's a lot of reading.
It is a large format paperback, 8x10 size, and it's about 300 pages, and so it's single spaced,
and
it's packed.
I've done my best to make it fun to read, if you can understand that concept. Even though some horrendous things happen, it's not fall on the floor, laugh out funny, but there are amusing things to be found, I think.
Well, our lives are affected by so many things. This, only two things are infinite: the universe and human stupidity. And I'm not so sure about the former.
See, that's funny right there.
There are two times in a man's life when he should not speculate: when he can't afford it, and when he can.
There you go. There's an endless array of them.
That's Mark Twain.
That's right.
And that was Albert Einstein before, but you should know that quote.
Yes. Yes, we got them all.
We're still in the forest. I just want to read.
No, play some music. Play some music. Make it fun. Play Trouble Every Day.
Here we go. Here's from the Mono Freakout. Here's Trouble Every Day.
Yeah.
Well, I'm about to get upset. Watching my TV. Checking out the news, I tell my eyeballs fail to see. I mean to say that every day is just another rotten mess. And when it's gonna change, my friend, is anybody's guess. So I'm watching and I'm waiting, hoping for the best. Even think I go to pray every time I hear them saying that there's no way to delay that trouble coming every day. No way to delay that trouble coming every day. When's
Wednesday I watched a riot. I seen the cops out on the street. Watch them throwing rocks and stuff and choking in the heat. Listen to reports about the whiskey passing round. Seen the smoke and fire and the market burning down. Watch while everybody on your street would take a turn. The stomping, smashing, bashing, crashing, slashing, busting, burn. And I'm watching and I'm waiting, hoping for the best. Even think I go to praying every time I hear them saying that there's no way to delay that trouble coming every day. No way to delay that trouble coming every day. You can cool it, you can heat it, cause baby I don't need it. Take your TV tube and eat it, and all that phony stuff on sports and all the unconfirmed reports. You know I watch that rotten box until my head began to hurt from checking out the way the newsmen say they get the dirt before the guys on channel so-and-so. The further they assert that any show they'll interrupt could bring you news if it comes up. They say that if the place blows up, they will be the first to tell. Cause the boys they got downtown are working hard and doing swell. And if anybody gets the news before it hits the street, they say that no one grabs it faster, their coverage can't be beat. And if another woman driver gets machine gun from her seat, they'll send some joker with a brownie and you'll see it all complete. So I'm watching and I'm waiting, hoping for the best. Even think I go to praying every time I hear them saying that there's no way to delay that trouble coming every day. No way to delay that trouble coming every day. Hey, you know something, people? I'm not black, but there's a whole lot of times I wish I could say I'm not white. Well, I've seen the fires burning and the local people turning on the merchants and the shops who used to sell their brooms and mops and every other household item. Watch a mob just turn and bite them, and they say it served them right because a few of them were white. And it's the same across the nation, black and white discrimination. Yeah, and you can't understand me and all that other jazz they hand me in the papers and TV and all that mass stupidity that seems to grow more every day. Each time you hear something we say, who wants to go and do you in? Cause the color of your skin just don't appeal to him, no matter if it's black or white, because he's out for blood tonight. Sit around at home and watch this thing again. But I'll bet there won't be many left to see it really end. Cause a fire in the street ain't like a fire in the heart. And in the eyes of all these people, don't you know that this could start on any street in any town, in any state, if any clown decides that now's the time to fight for some ideal he thinks is right. And if a million more agree, there ain't no great society as it applies to you and me. Our country isn't free, and the law refused to see if all that you can ever be is just a lousy janitor. Unless your uncle owns a store, you know that five and every four just gonna amount to nothing more. If there were lots of rats go across the floor and make up songs about being poor. Blow your harmonica, son.
When I hear that now, I think about, what was it there at one of the like in Montana or one of those famous Indian stands, the FBI, somebody in the police or the FBI set up a stereo and played Trouble Every Day over and over and over again to drive them out of their enclave.
Blow your harmonica, son.
Are you aware that Nurse With Wound covered Trouble Every Day?
Which?
The band Nurse With Wound. Steve Stapleton and Nurse With Wound.
I don't even know that band. Okay. I'm so out of it.
I have to make an MP3 and send it to you.
Oh, all right.
They do it in whispers. They sing it in whispers with very weird music around it. And it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. I got a Zappa thing that you don't know about. All right, cool.
Hey, there's lots of Zappa things. I can't keep up with this stuff. I have a life to carry on with, you know. I can't be one of those guys that, visits Zappeteers on a daily basis and looks to insult people every chance they can get.
Well, last Saturday you did a radio show with Dominic Priore, was one of the other guests on the program.
He was.
And when Dominic and I were here, we did a show on the Byrds, or we did 6 hours on the Byrds about a year ago.
Holy cow.
Yeah, over three months, two hours
wow.
each month.
Of course.
And it's all posted on the Kill site. And one of the things he pulled out of his head was that Frank Zappa had recorded, had written songs that were recorded in the 50s the song Memories of El Monte.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was, and Ray Collins.
Yeah.
For the Penguins.
For the Penguins. Yeah, there we go.
Earth Angel.
Yeah. And I didn't know this, you know.
Oh, really?
And then he turned around and said, hey, I can even top that. Zimmerman had a song during that period out here in California. And since I've never heard that, I'm a little skeptical. There might be another person named Zimmerman. I had a good friend named Gary Zimmerman when I was in high school.
Of course.
You know. But a Zimmerman credit before Dylan in the 50s would definitely be an interesting...
I have not heard about that.
Yeah.
I told you I am completely out of it at this point.
Uh-huh. Well,
I'm a big help.
Thomas Perante, who also, as Tom has, played percussion with Zug's Rift.
Yes, the great Zug's Rift.
We want to give special credence to Zug's Rift, right?
We
here.
Absolutely do. I want to all thank Zug's publicly out loud to anyone who will listen. Zug's actually gave me the title for the book, Summer of Love My Ass. And before his eyes quit on him completely, I sent him some early chapters he requested. He wanted to look at some of my book. And I sent him early chapters, and he loved it. And he called me up one day, and he said, hey, I have the perfect title for your book, Summer of Love My Ass. And he was right. Instant. It was instant. And I says, I can use that? I said, that's perfect. And he says, take it. And I have. But I've given him a thank you. And
yes, there's a thank you in the book.
And he knows I miss him, and he knows that I was pretty crazy about him.
Well, he's passed away.
Yes, unfortunately.
Just a few months ago.
Yes.
Thomas.
Yes, I think it was...
That sounds like something he'd come up with.
March or April. Yeah, I felt very bad. Still feel bad, actually. You know? I mean, we have to get on with our lives, of course, but, you know, I miss the guy, man. You should go out and hunt down some Zug's Rift. If you like odd music, or if you like Zappa Beefheart kind of flavor in there, although we never attempted to copy either of those artists. Zug's was original, as far as I'm concerned. And I was a big fan of Don's and Frank's, so, you know. Because I know a lot of hardcore Zappa fans think of Zug's as a Zappa ripoff something or or the other. They don't get it.
Oh, the Zapateers?
Well, some of them. Some of them. Yeah, they don't get it.
Well, that, unfortunately, that happens.
Of course.
People obsess over their favorite artists. Of course. I mean, we all do that.
But they love Zoogs in Europe.
Yeah.
I was shocked when we went to Europe in 1990. I was absolutely shocked because we were playing here in L.A. We were doing the Anti-Club and a bunch of crummy clubs around the area. Friday night, Saturday night, if we were lucky, 40 people would show up. In Europe, they love Zoogs. They knew who he was. They knew the lyrics to the songs.
Amazing.
There was press that showed up at every gig and waited to have interviews with him after our sound checks. We were actually...
Did Zoogs ever consider just living in Europe?
No, but after we got back, I told him that I was willing to move to Europe, and we would pick up some extra shitheads over there, a couple of extra European shitheads. I'm sure there were somebody over there.
I'm sure.
Who would be willing to give that a go. And we could make a living playing music, but he wouldn't do it. His son was young, and he didn't want to pull his son out of school and drag him off to a foreign country. And so...
Well, I mean, I see this happens with a lot of artists. They can make a living in Europe.
Yeah.
And they can barely scrape by in the United States.
I enjoyed performing in Europe immensely. They were very appreciative. Very appreciative.
Well, I wish I had Zoogs riff music support.
Well, I feel like an idiot because I actually only have one Zoogs album at my disposal because practically everything I own is in storage.
Uh-huh.
I did bring some music into the house, but I only had one CD at the house and I didn't bring it. I apologize. My bad, as they say.
Oh, well.
I'm sorry, Zoogs.
Me too, Zoogs. I will say that at one point I did an interview with Gail Zappa on Kill Radio.
I remember years ago when you...
I asked you for some questions.
Yes.
Yes. And they impressed her.
Uh-uh.
Because it made me sound like I knew what I was talking about.
Uh-oh. Well, don't tell her you know me.
One of the things I found that you had were like pictures of Frank and his kids that you'd gotten from a photographer who took pictures of Frank and his kids and made copies for you.
My good friend John Livesey, who actually took the
cover photo.
The cover photo of my book for me, was Frank's photographer for a couple of years.
My listener Louise is here, and she says she was always at the Anti-Club every Friday night in the 80s.
Ah. Were you there when Zoogs Rift appeared? I wasn't there. I didn't show up until 88. Though Zoogs was,
Zoogs was around the 70s.
Yeah, he had gained some notoriety in one way or another long before I was in the band. So I didn't join the band in 88.
Mm-hmm.
But I played on virtually almost every album until his last project in 2001. So I got my licks in here and there.
Yeah, yeah.
I wish I would have met him earlier, but it didn't happen.
Well, yeah, was there and also performed once a week there, Louise did.
Ah.
Louise is a vocalist.
Ah.
A great vocalist.
Ah.
And used to open up every Minutemen show.
Ah.
Did you see the Minutemen?
I did not.
Okay.
I missed all that.
I wasn't here then.
All right. That's a good excuse.
I missed the 80s in Los Angeles. I was in New York in the 80s.
I did my best to.
Yeah.
I did my best to. What can I tell you? It wasn't speaking to me is all I can tell you.
Yeah. Well, it was a scene. You had your job at Rhino and you were drumming and all right. All right.
Anyway, I was going to say John Livesey, the photographer, took the cover of a photo of my book. Wonderful photo, John. Thank you so much.
He was Frank's photographer, Frank Zappa's photographer for a couple of years. And he shot the cover for Shut Up and Play Your Guitar.
Yeah.
And You Are What You Is.
Mm-hmm.
And the Valley Girl single. Remember that?
Sure. Those? Sure.
That's John's work. Fine photographer.
Excellent work. Well, yeah. nice picture of you in your shorts.
And my socks.
And your socks.
Thank you.
Back at Fort Ord.
In this exact place.
It's in the stockade. The cover photograph is Tom in the stockade at Fort Ord. What year?
What year did we do that? That was 2006, I think.
Excellent.
Thank you. It wasn't easy. But we did it.
Tom is here. We are trying to sell the book, Summer of Love My Ass. Tom read from it earlier. You can go to summerofloveassmyass.com, and you can order the book there. It's cheaper there. It's a little more expensive on Amazon.
Yes, if you order directly from the publisher site, SPB Publishing, that'll be the first link you'll see.
That's the under home. That's the link on summerofloveassmyass.com.
Yes.
Yes.
We'll take you to my website where you will find the link.
Okay.
Are we there?
Hey, I buy most of my books nowadays, I have to admit, off of Amazon. So
I do, too. I do as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. I got a Harlan Ellison book last week for 35 cents. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Harlan is going to be at some movie theater on Tuesday for 10 bucks. So I think I'm going to go see him. I like Harlan, too.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to discuss the glass teat, and he's going to be showing video things and all that.
So, he's a bright guy.
Yeah, fun guy.
Great writer.
Yeah. The book I got was Watching for 35 cents. Huge book.
I have that somewhere in my storage unit. Yeah.
we bump heads in those things. Well, I wanted to, let's talk about Frank Zappa.
Okay.
When did you have the notorious meeting with Mr. Zappa?
God, I can't remember the year. I just wrote an article about that for my friend at Zapateer's site. My friend Arthur Barrow, who was Frank's bass player from 1979, Joe's Garage, on for a number of years there, took me over there one night. And we wound up just he and I and Frank, for the most part. Gail came in for a little bit, very, very few moments. But it was just he and Arthur and I. And it was wonderful. And Frank was so nice, and he was so much fun. And he played us, some unreleased stuff.
Has it been released since then?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. He played us a couple of pieces from Jazz from Hell, which had been yet to be released, uh-huh. which he ultimately won a Grammy for.
That's a Sinclair album, isn't it?
Yes, for the most part. Yes, absolutely. I think there's one live guitar solo on there. But Frank always accused them of nobody ever really listened to it, that he couldn't really explain why they gave it to him. he was convinced that no one over there could have listened to it.
So, overall, how many times did you see Frank perform?
Oh, gosh, I can't even tell you.
More than 50?
Not that many.
Not that many.
I had a problem early on. I didn't even get to see him until 71 at Poly Pavilion, which was the album... Just Another Band from L.A.
Uh-huh.
That's the first time I got to see him. I didn't even know at the time, early on when he was playing at the Shrine every weekend. I had no idea. I was out of it. I was playing in a top 40 band. I was in living in Bellflower. What can I tell you? Duh. But and then I was always playing in bands, so when you're in a top 40 band, it was really tough in those days. There wasn't that much of a network,
right,
per se, so it's hard to get replaced for one night to fill in. And one night I just made up a big lie and said I was sick, and I got a drummer ahead of time that I knew wouldn't let him down too badly. And I went and saw that show, and it was great. And I tried to do that throughout the years, but it wasn't always successful. I missed a couple.
Well, how long did you work as a pro drummer?
Oh, from the time I was 16 till well, I guess we're pro drummer. You're talking about getting paid then?
Well, that would be nice. Yeah,
all the time, weekly, on a weekly basis.
On a weekly basis, getting paid.
On a
paid.
Weekly basis. From the time I was 16 till about the time I was 28, 29.
Uh-huh.
Until disco reared its ugly head.
And it was all pre-recorded then, yeah.
Yeah, it killed all the top 40 bands.
Yeah.
The scene was definitely over. But in the old days, it was you could work constantly. And we did. I worked with bands constantly.
Uh-huh.
All the time. I never had a period where we had to look for work too long.
And you signed with the Musicians Union then?
On and off. When I had to. When there was a gig that I had to be a union member, I'd sign. And then when it'd run out, and I'd do a bunch of non-union gigs, then I'd let it lapse. And instead of paying the fines for not paying my dues for all that time,
right,
I would usually rejoin again. I think I did that 3 or 4 times. I didn't know what to do.
Well, you were getting by.
I was trying. I was just trying to make a dollar.
One thing I wanted to ask about Frank, and you wouldn't know because you didn't see the band in those days. When the band was first signed by Tom Wilson to MGM in '66, I feel that they were really a band. That while Frank wrote the material and he probably did most of the arranging, I assume. But they kind of had an equal shares with it?
No.
So it was Zappa and the band.
It was. Zappa was the leader all the way around. He made the business decisions. He made all the musical decisions. And he used all the characters in his band, which he was really great at. And he mm-hmm. would, you know, take some outrageous thing that happened on the road or this or that and turn it into a piece of folk art, which he did constantly, mm-hmm. right up until the end. And but he started paying them a salary pretty early on. He had a setup like that. I mean, it was a lot friendlier atmosphere, of course, because he came in as an outsider.
Right.
You know, at the Broadside.
Were they
in
the
Pomona.
What was that?
They were the Soul Giants,
yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
and yeah. He came in at the Broadside, which incidentally, I played at and got busted on stage by the FBI at the Broadside. It's in the book. when I was AWOL. And I wound up at the Broadside. And only then did I discover from the club owner one night that Frank Zappa had formed the Mothers there. I had no idea. We were just there inadvertently. We wound up there. What can I say? Serendipity of some weird, twisted sort.
I love it. The period of the Mothers that I would, if I could go back in time and see, is when they were doing their shows in New York in '67.
The Garrick
shows.
Yeah, that would have been fun.
Are there any films?
Not really.
Yeah.
A little footage, but nothing synced up, really. No entire performances that I'm aware of or that I've even heard about.
Are there even tapes of those shows?
Frank has some footage of the Garrick here and there, but he's always edited. I think some was on Video from Hell that he put out. He put out some video product years ago,
uh-huh.
Soul Squat, for whatever reason. Even as hardcore fans that buy the CDs and the records don't seem to buy the video product for some strange reason. I don't know.
Surprised.
I don't know. But there was some Garrick Theater footage.
Are there any audio recordings of full performances at the Garrick?
Some board tapes here and there.
Okay.
Yeah.
That have ever been released or?
Not that I can recall.
Yeah, because I can't
maybe
find
on, maybe on one of the stage volumes, but I don't know.
You're trying to
get me confused now.
Well, I'm sorry. The most recent book that I have on Frank is from the 90s, and it doesn't. I mean, I've dug through it.
I bet there are some downloads available on Zapateers.com.
Okay, I'll take a look. Because that particular period when he was obviously doing a theatrical show just sounds like the most marvelous period. I only saw Frank at Illinois State University in Bloomington, Illinois, in Normal, Illinois, in 75, the Bongo Fury tour.
Ah.
And so I saw Don, too.
Yes, you did.
And then in 79, I saw Don at the old Waldorf in San Francisco, and that was one of the great fucking shows of my life.
Yes.
That was too much. You know? I wish I'd seen Frank more. I had a friend in Brooklyn whose next-door neighbor, Frank, came to his house, sat in his basement, and played guitar for him sometime in the late 70s. And I said, can I meet this guy? I'd like to meet him. And it was in Canarsie. And that Frank Zappa came to Canarsie, went to this guy's house.
Where everyone looks the same.
I don't understand, but there it was. Yeah, well, but Frank for me is those amazing first albums. Everything's terrific, and as a longtime fan, he probably became even better as he went along. But I still cherish Freak Out, Absolutely Free, We're Only in It for the Money, Lumpy Gravy, Reuben and the Jets.
Oh, my goodness.
Weasels Rip My Flesh.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And Burnt Weenie Sandwich and up till Fillmore West or Fillmore East, 1970. That period is just beyond belief for me. I can never tire of it.
Just Another Band from L.A. is just a pretty great live album.
Yep, it is. And
200 Motels. There's some great musical pieces on 200 Motels.
I only saw the movie once, and it made, of course, no sense whatsoever to me at all.
Well.
I saw it once, and I was probably doing LSD or something when I saw it.
Yeah.
And not that Frank did LSD.
No.
There's no chance that he did LSD.
No, I have never heard or known of any evidence.
I mean, Howard Kalin told me that he smoked pot with Frank. And Frank said, if you tell anybody I did this, I'll deny it.
I don't know. Maybe so, maybe no.
Yeah. I don't know either.
I wasn't there. They did not invite me in.
We were. It was working on a Rhino project,
and, or something.
It was a film, and Howard and I talked for a long time at one point, and he told me that.
Was that my dinner with Jimmy?
Yes.
Ah.
Yes.
Have you seen my dinner with Jimmy?
I have not seen my dinner. I'd like to. Is it worth seeing?
You would probably appreciate the idea.
Well, I read the script, and Howard wrote the script, and that's about how we got talking. I was just doing, set work.
It's not totally executed all that well.
I think they did it for under $10,000.
I know.
It was pretty cheap. We were in a Chinese restaurant is where we did all the interiors.
Yeah.
And they made the stage there and everything, But it was fun. It was fun to work around those people. And to talk to Howard was great.
Sure, he's a fun guy. I like Howard.
Yeah.
I worked with Mark and Howard both.
That's Flo and Eddie.
That is Flo and Eddie.
And the Turtles.
And I worked with them in the early 80s. I played on Strawberry Shortcake soundtracks with them.
Really?
Yes. And we also did a Peter Paz Easter special with Ray Bolger and Flo and Eddie. And I played on those, and those were all for very young children.
Well, one of the most fun recordings that I've gotten in the last 4 or 5 years is one of Flo and Eddie radio shows from like 73 or so that was done out here.
Yeah.
And it's a 3-hour show, and they have Harry Nilsson as a guest.
Yep.
And it's completely wacky.
Oh, really?
It was complete gas. I assume they were smoking while they were doing the show.
Oh, yeah. I guarantee it.
Oh, and it was, yeah, it was great fun.
I guarantee it.
Yeah.
I was there in the inner sanctum. I'll tell you, man, those guys smoked maybe more pot than anyone I've ever seen before in my life at the times that I was dealing with them, which was fine with me. I had no problem with it whatsoever. But, I mean, they were out smoking Bob Marley.
Yeah.
Seriously. And the Grateful Dead. They had it going on.
Saw them all.
They had it going on. But they're smart business guys, too.
Yep. Yep.
Smart business guys, too.
And they're still licensing Happy Together at least once a
Absolutely.
Week.
Absolutely. And, since I had worked with them a number of times, I even we did a Turtles gig up north at one point. And we went up there and played Turtles songs. I played Happy Together with them. So anyway, when I was writing the book and I was looking for endorsements, right?
Yeah.
I got to tell this now. I contacted Mark Volman, and requesting that they give it a minute of thought here to see if they could help me out one time, y'all. And Mark sent me an interesting reply, but in essence, they didn't endorse anyone or anything. What I kind of read in between the lines was, unless we get paid. Which is, I guess, what I was referring to as smart businessmen, I guess. They're not giving anything away. But anyway, you know, and he went into some dissertation about we all made our decisions and at that time, and you know, some of us made these choices.
Well, that's fair. Yeah. I think that's fair. It's a disappointment, but if
I wasn't that disappointed because I didn't even want to ask them, and I only asked them because an agent suggested that I do that. The agent that suggested that I seek the endorsements for the book, somewherebelovedmyass.com. I'm no good at this. I've never done this before.
but we need to get Stewie from Family Guy as your agent.
Something. But that's the only reason I contacted him. Because they weren't really a protest group, or they didn't have anything to do with the anti-Vietnam anything. You know, they were just a famous group
from that time.
Yeah. Period. But it didn't really mean anything.
Yeah.
You know, the first two guys I went after actually were Arlo Guthrie and Country Joe, of course, wrote the two seminal anti-Vietnam pieces.
I'll prepare it.
Yeah. And, I won't tell the story about contacting them unless you want to ask me to.
Well, I think because it's
appropriate. I don't want anybody falling asleep.
I think because it's appropriate, let's listen to Country Joe and the Fish.
All right. I'm a little mad at him, but that's okay.
Let's move fast. big chance has come at last. Gotta go out, get those reds. The only good commie is one that's dead. And you know that peace can only be won when the golden ball of the kingdom come.
And it's 1, 2, 3, what are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. Next stop is Vietnam. And it's 5, 6, 7, open up the pearly gates.
Vietnam. Come on, fathers, don't hesitate. Send them off before it's too late. Be the first one on your block to have every boy come home in a box.
And it's 1, 2, 3, what are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. Next stop is Vietnam. And it's 5, 6, 7, open up the pearly gates.
Seconds left.
I think we're under barrage. Captain, I can't even talk.
That's Country Joe and the Fish with the Fish Cheer, and I feel like I'm fixing to die. Now, I saw Country Joe in about 78 up in Berkeley and do a solo gig in a tiny club that was made, you know, there were maybe 40 of us there, and he was solo with his acoustic guitar. He had just released that album of Robert Service songs that he did, and he sang some of those, and they were like, tear your heart out. They were really powerful shit. And he made a joke at one point. You're not going to ask me to sing. I feel like I'm fixing to die tonight, right?
He was over that.
He was over it at the time. But it was nice. And then what? Barry Melton from his band then ran for Congress or something up in Berkeley, I think it was.
I have a vague memory of that.
Yeah. Yeah. There was one of the record stores I used to go to. It's not there anymore. Had a poster, Barry Melton for Congress, up on the wall.
All right.
So you sent the manuscript to Country Joe McDonald.
I did. We got in contact. I managed to contact him, and he asked me to send it, and I did. And soon after, I got an email from him saying, I don't have time to look at this. And I replied as politely as I could. You know, what can I say? You know, you can't force the guy to do anything. He said, send it. I sent it. It was too much for him or something. And he couldn't figure out that, actually, you know, I was so naive at that time, because this was early. This is the first people I was sending it to.
Mm-hmm.
So I sent him the entire book, which was pretty thick.
So I can understand that he, you know, I didn't expect him to read the whole thing. But, you know, check out a couple of chapters, read intermittently, you know, 20 minutes, 30 minutes. Give me an hour.
Right.
And you can tell what the gist of it is.
Well, you sent me something like 20, 30 pages of it.
Yeah.
Some, you know, 8 years ago or
yeah,
something.
That was in the early stages.
And all it did was just make me want to know more.
Well,
I mean, now I got the book here. I know what I'm going to be doing this weekend.
I can guarantee you that you have not heard the story before. There's nothing atypical about the story other than the fact that I was one of those poor suckers trying to get away without going to jail initially. I want to reiterate that because I did not want to do that. I wanted to avoid that at all costs. And I thought I could. And I tried a number of different ways. And you'll get a real big hint of one of the things that I did do on the free chapter on the website. SummerOfLoveMyAss.com. I can't help myself.
Well, I don't think it's a spoiler to say that when you went for your... To answer your draft call, you got as fucked up as you possibly could the
night
before.
Absolutely, I was one of those guys. I did the textbook ritual at the time: take a massive amount of speed, as much speed as you can, stay up as many nights as you can, take any other substances that are close by. I couldn't take really any downers. Because I had to work every night, believe it or not. And I stayed up.
Yeah, I did. Play the drums.
I was up ultimately about five nights in a row before they made off with me. It was a tough one. In fact, when I started writing this and I was thinking back and remembering what we did, I was lucky I didn't kill myself. I would be dead in 20 minutes at this point, but...
Well, but you were a strapping, what, 18-year-old?
I was 21.
21.
21. Yeah. And, yeah. You know, you can't die at 21 from taking too many...
Not yet.
You know, bennies.
Well, people do that. They do that, you know.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people are weaker today than...
But I did that, and I was very uncooperative, which is why I had to go back 3 days in a row. They made me go back 3 days in a row, because I was just the fuck up there.
And they still took you.
It was as if I had an invisible bullseye painted on my back that only they could see. I'm serious. That's how ugly it was. Which is why it makes it so funny now.
Well, we want the book to sell because the publisher invested a lot in doing this. It's expensive to make books.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. Thank you, Scott Parker.
And have you gotten any customer reviews on Amazon yet?
I have one review, yes.
Is it good?
From a guy in San Diego? Yes, it is 5-star.
Excellent.
5-star, very nice review. Thank you, whoever that was. Jazz lover, I think.
Well, I'll throw one on when I finish reading the book.
All right. Well, if you like to read, I think you'll have a good time.
Yeah, I've already enjoyed what I've read, so I kind of think I'll keep it up. I won't. I was gonna go into something about a project that I just did, but you know what the hell.
Let's hear about your project, Benham.
Well, it's just because it was about Amazon. I wrote notes for this new Sun Ra set,
yes.
And there's one review on Amazon, and it gives it 1 star and tells people to avoid it because it's not fun to listen to. And there have been 2 follow-up comments from people. Thanks for telling me this. Now I don't have to buy it. And I wish I'd read this before, I wish I'd seen this before I bought it.
And, well, what's supposed to be wrong with it? What's wrong with Sun Ra? Is it great?
What it is, it's a 14-disc set of the history of Sun Ra, and it's the early history of Sun Ra. And it's done by somebody who was very close to Sonny during the 70s, 80s, and 90s. and Michael Anderson, who actually is the archivist of the Sun Ra Archives now. He's the official guy. And so Michael has a long history as a DJ on WFMU in Jersey. And he worked, in fact, for 10 years, he was on Sirius, too. And so he has a history as a kind of jazz and profession, you know, as a DJ doing history of music. So he essentially arranged this as a documentary with comments by Sonny, you know, interviews with Sonny that are included, and the music that inspired Sonny. So it listed as being from 1914, which is when he was born, to 1959, which is the cutoff point for the set. So it's the build-up to the psychedelic jazz of the 60s that Sun Ra became. The cover says this in detail. It explains what the set is.
What do you expect?
And so what I did was I wrote a follow-up comment in where I told the story of how we put this package together. If you go to Amazon and look up The Eternal Myth Revealed, Volume 1, you'll find in the replies this long comment. I'm actually going to put it on my blog in a few days. And I explained how the piece arose and why, when I finally heard it, I was very skeptical, too, when I was hearing about it, and it took so long to put together. But when I finally heard it, I realized this is exactly the way Sun Ra would want this story done. And there is so much good music on it. It's amazing. But it's not the Sun Ra music of the 60s and 70s that blew people away. It's him finding his voice as an arranger. And so he's doing things with Red Saunders Orchestra, with singers like Joe Williams. And it's marvelous. He also did doo-wop. He did a lot of doo-wop, so there's a lot of him working with doo-wop groups in this set, too.
Right up my alley.
And it's just a fascinating set, but it is not a new Sun Ra album of music you've never heard before by Sonny. That's there, but it's more than that. And it's really a build-up to the next box set, which is going to be another massive set of all Sun Ra unreleased materials like you won't believe. So I explain all this, and the guy who said, I wish I'd seen this review before I bought it, wrote and said, well, I don't have too much a problem. It's just that I didn't read the cover of the box, and I haven't looked at the book that comes with it. All he's done is just put the CDs on and listen to them. And I said, well, if you don't look at the cover and you don't look at the book, I can understand being disappointed. But I can't understand somebody spending $100 on a set and not looking at what it is before you start listening to it.
That sounds like one of those 1% guys to me.
Yeah. So anyway, it's a long side story, and I still love Sonny. I love Sun Ra.
Hey. God. No, it sounds amazing. Sounds interesting. I would be interested.
It's available.
All right. Well,
I'll send you a link about it.
If I ever get $100,
That is the one thing. It is difficult because it is expensive. The next set, which will probably be equal price, I think it'll be easier to spring for because it's going to open up all these albums from the 60s. I still simply cannot believe Sun Ra's albums in the 60s. Albums like Nothing Is, Strange Strings. I wonder if Frank listened to him.
he must have heard it.
He had to.
One time or another.
You know, it's just amazing. Everybody went to see him when he was playing in the Village in the 60s. He played every Monday night for like 7 years at one club. And, I remember having a date in New York and walking across 23rd Street and hearing this wonderful music coming out of the squat theater, and it was Sun Ra. And and I think it was $5 to go in to bop around with Sun Ra for hours.
Track one.
No problem.
Can I give a shout out to a good friend of mine?
Sure.
Excuse me, folks. Arthur Barrow, longtime friend of mine, Zappa alumni. We spoke of him earlier, I believe. And this is a song that he composed, and it's a wonderful. I haven't run this by you yet, but I think you'll like this, Bennett. Uh-huh. Wonderful vocal by two other Zappa alumni, Ike Willis and Ray White. I don't know if you're familiar with
I know
with
who
them.
Ike Willis is, yeah.
They have some serious chops, and this track even has a message, but it's a good one. And you can tap your toe to it and sing along. It's called Believe It.
Here we go.
Dark people.
Somebody else.
Do you believe?
Do you?
Do you believe?
Tell me. Do you believe what you let them believe, or do you believe in yourself? Some folks believe in love, others they believe in hate. Some believe that what they are depends on what they hate. Some folks believe in guns, others they believe in knives. Some believe in peace on earth and saving people's lives.
Do you?
Tell me. Do you believe what you want to believe, or do you follow somebody else? Let them believe, or do you believe in yourself? Let them believe, or do you believe in yourself? Some folks believe in life, others they believe in death. Some believe that who they are depends on who they're with. Some folks believe in the left, others they believe in the right. Some believe in fight for causes, others just believe in the fight. Follow somebody else. Do you? Do you believe what you let them believe, or do you believe in yourself?
That track is Believe It, Arthur Barrow, with some vocal help from Ike Willis and Ray White.
Cool.
Great singers.
Yeah. And now we have from You Can't Do That on Stage Anymore, Volume 3, Lucille Has Messed My Mind Up. And, and where's this from?
I don't know specifically what performance this was. Is this
actually one of those things where he mixed a bunch of different recordings
No,
together?
I think this is all one rendition on this one.
Louis.
Lucille has messed my mind up.
You ain't kidding.
And here, has Mother Mania ever officially been reissued?
On a download.
It is available on a download?
On the Zappa site, Zappa.com, okay. Yeah.
Well, from the Mother Mania album, that's the only greatest hits album that Frank did.
Yes.
Right? But this is actually... like the Mother Mania tracks are, some of them are re-edited, and this is from the very first Mother's album originally, and it's been edited for Mother Mania.
This is the stuff.
It can't happen here. It can't happen here. I'm telling you, my dear, that it can happen here, because I've been checking it out, baby. I checked it out a couple of times, and I'm telling you, it can't happen here. Oh, darling, it's important that you believe me, bop, 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 that it can't happen here. Who could imagine that they would freak out somewhere in Kansas. 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 That they would freak out in Minnesota. Could imagine that they would freak out in Washington, D.C. Everybody's safe and it can't happen here. No freaks for us. It can't happen here. Everybody's clean and it can't happen here. No, no, it won't happen here. I'm telling you kids, it won't happen here. Bop, bop, diddy, bop, diddy, bop, bop, bop. Plastic folks, you know it won't happen here. You're safe, mama. You're safe, baby. You just cook the TV dinner and you make it. Bop, bop, bop. We're gonna get a TV dinner and cook it up. Oh, get a TV dinner and cook it up, cook it up. Oh, and it won't happen here.
No, 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 man, you guys are really safe. Everything's cool.
I remember to do. I remember to do. I remember to do. They had a swimming pool. I remember to do. I remember to do. They had a swimming pool. I remember to do. I remember to do. They had a swimming pool.
and they thought it couldn't happen here. Da, 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 da. They knew it couldn't happen here. They were so sure it couldn't happen here, but
Susie.
Yes, 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 I've always felt it. Yes, I agree, and it really makes me psychotic. It's a real thing, and it really makes it.
Susie, you just got to town, and we've been very interested in your development since you first took the shots.
Forget it!
It can't happen here, can't happen here, can't happen here.
Oomph, perfect. And here from volume 6 of You Can't Do That on Stage Anymore is a live version of Take Your Clothes Off When You Dance. There will come a time when everybody who is lonely will be free to sing and dance and love.
I'd like to see it.
There will come a time when every evil that you know will be an evil that you can rise above.
Oh, we can only wish, man. Too bad he wasn't right.
Who cares if you're too poor to buy, you can't afford to buy a pair of Mata Gogo stretch elastic pants?
Exactly.
There will come a time when you can even take your clothes off when you dance.
That's true.
It's happened.
I think it has. Yeah. I think I saw a couple of videos or something.
Sharing some Zappa. I wanted to say that when I was a junior in high school, and I had joined the choir to get out of study hall, because study hall was so fucking boring.
Yes.
So I joined the choir, and I remember bringing in both the Divine Toe, the crawled into my hand, Honest, and My Mother Mania. And in the choir, when nothing else was going on, playing them, and I got in serious trouble.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
Only 13, and she knows how to nasty.
Oh, my goodness.
It's a great world. Oh, it's a great world that we've lived in here. Even though it's a terribly sad world, and it just gets more and more sad. Did you see any of that, the most recent Republican debate the other night?
I saw more than I probably needed to, but they've all been circus of horrors as far as I'm concerned.
Can you actually believe that they have worse Republicans now than George W. Bush? That George W. Bush now looks like a reasonable, rational guy.
I wouldn't go that far. I wouldn't go that far.
Compared
not at all.
Rick Perry.
Not at all. No, Rick Perry is he renders me silent there for a moment. No, he is definitely dumber than George Bush and even Sarah Palin, perhaps. Pretty sad. It's like a bad acid trip every night I watch the news. That's all I can think of. I think somebody has slipped some bad acid into my cornflakes or something.
It's unbelievable. Like. And a year from now, we'll have the election will be going on. It's, you know, I agree with most of the pundits who say it's going to be Mitt Romney is going to run and Obama will win again. It's, you know, who knows? Anything can happen.
I wouldn't say anybody knows what's going to happen, man.
Right.
I mean, George Bush got reelected, didn't he?
Yeah.
That was a shock.
Well, it was only because of Ohio. If there'd been more, if the Republicans hadn't controlled the voting machines in Ohio in 2004. John Kerry would have been elected president.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he isn't. He didn't.
He didn't.
It wasn't.
He didn't. And Al Gore wasn't president on September 11th either. So.
That's true. I remember that.
But it is truly a ridiculous race when people like Herman Cain and Michelle Bachmann and Rick Perry are taken seriously.
Well, I find it hard to have any optimism at all, to tell you the truth, for the future. I mean, from what I've witnessed from these people and what's been going on and how far is the Occupy movement going to go before people start getting killed and you know, it's shades of the 60s. And it's about time.
Yes.
They should have been out there when Bush went to war with Iraq. That's when they should have been out there.
That's when the Occupy movement should have started. Instead, there was the knee-jerk peace people who needed to be there. But since they weren't being listened to one bit, it served no real purpose. Right now, of course, everybody, you know, the media doesn't know what to do with the Occupy people. Here in Los Angeles, it appears that we're not seeing the trade unions and things siding with the Occupy LA people.
Yeah.
Some. I know some teachers who go down and talk with the people and speak and stuff. But for the most part, we're not seeing the labor unions jumping in, whereas they are in New York. And they are in some other cities around the country and in Canada, but not here in L.A. Here in L.A., the Occupy people are considered, well, they're too close to Skid Row, is what they say. So they're doing drugs down there.
Of course.
And the camp, it's now broken into two camps, the General Assembly who want to organize and have people who take care of things, and the People's Forum who want to get stoned. Basically.
Well, I'm glad I wasn't getting so optimistic about that. You just confirmed my my belief here.
Well, I believe in the Occupy movement. I you notice that they were completely ignored until 700 people got arrested on the Brooklyn Bridge.
Yes.
Then suddenly attention started
being paid.
Well,
depending on who you were watching for your news on TV.
Just before it, MSNBC started to cover it.
Keith was doing it.
Yeah, he's not on MSNBC anymore, and
no.
I don't get him on my cable.
Ah.
So I only see him on YouTube now.
Ah.
And
well, he's on it. He's on it every night.
And bless his heart.
Yeah.
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 It's what we need, because the people are still asking, what do they want? And it's not one answer. It's not like we're meeting at 9 a.m. on Saturday to protest this war. That's not what it's about. But what do you do? I mean,
I have no idea.
Yeah, exactly. What do you do?
And neither does anyone else.
The Congress is the 1%, because most of them are worth $1 million. So they're not just in the pockets. They are the 1%. And they're not listening, or they don't want to listen. Of course, the Democrats are siding with them, so there's some listening going on. But the Congress isn't the answer. The answer isn't to get elected. The answer, unfortunately, is that you got to knock things down. And I don't know how you do that.
I've already been knocked down, thank you. I'll probably be knocked down 10 minutes after I get home tonight. Which, in fact, I have to start thinking about shortly. I have a long drive.
What city are you living in now?
Laguna Niguel.
Laguna
and don't start Niguel. Thinking that I'm a rich person because I live in Laguna Niguel. that would be hooey. Believe me.
Well, let me play one more song.
Please.
And
let's make.
I'm gonna play the Fugs.
All right.
And there's like 4 second start here. There it comes. Because that's what we're in, folks.
Perfect minute.
Roll on.
Frontal politics. What I mean is, was it that set up a system, supposedly a democratic system, where you end up always voting for the lesser of two evils? I mean, was George Washington the lesser of two evils? Sometimes I wonder. You got some guy that says, for God's sake, we've got to stop having violence in this country, while he's spending $16,000 a second snuffing gooks.
From It Crawled Into My Hand, Honest. Wide, wide river, river of shit.
Sing it, brothers.
Now, they're on, I think, the Fugs' second album CD, there is an alternate version of Wide, Wide River. There's another version of Wide, Wide River.
If there is, I've completely forgotten about it.
It's not as good as this one. It's not as
listenable. I can't imagine how it could be. I love his primal scream at the end.
Me too. Me too.
So perfect.
Well, and bless Thule. Here's from the same album. Here's Burial Walt. One More Fugs.
Signs of a fetish, a crescent cross, phallus or sun. Spring apple flower, speak of me into a breeze blowing over your fingers. Taste of me when your lips taste the froth foaming out of the apple meat. Body, the signs of a fetish, a crescent cross, phallus or sun.
Burial Waltz, Ed Sanders, Tuli Kupferberg, Ken Weaver, From It Crawled Into My Hand.
Classic stuff.
Well, we are finishing up here with Mr. H.T. Brown, and we'll remind you to go to summeroflovemyass.com and pick up this book. Please pick up this book.
Yes,
you will read it. I'm going to I'll be adding a comment on Amazon, I promise.
Oh, thank you.
Unless, of course, I think it sucks, then I'll call you and tell you first before I do it.
All right. Well, you have to be honest about it. You have to be honest about it. But I think you'll be entertained and horrified at the same time. It's a black comedy, if you will.
I've already seen those sides of it.
Yes.
Now, do you have any other books in you?
I do, as a matter of fact, or at least I think I do. Since you asked me, I'll be the one to answer.
Okay.
Jesus Christ, what am I saying? Yes, I think the next one we're going to do it's kind of a specialty book called Zappa Stories.
Uh-huh.
And it's just we're going to compile the Zappa stories that I've done throughout the years for different sites. And I've written some new ones, and I'm going to write a couple more. And we're going to throw that out there. And then I've been working intermittently on a fictional account of the music industry.
Ooh.
Another black comedy, if you will. And since they say write about what you know about. Well, and since I worked almost 20 years at Rhino, I figure, hey, and maybe some of the old Rhino alumni will even recognize themselves. With their names changed, of course. So they'll all have to buy it.
Maybe I'll be a character.
Maybe you will. I who can know what's it's eventually going to come to. That's what I have going right now.
Uh-huh. Well, I think from what I've read so far, you have talent for this. I don't think that this is a complete anomaly. I think that you've been trained in your thinking over the years, by doing many different things that have been writing.
I have indeed, yes.
I mean, even those dumb catalogs and stuff that we wrote for Rhino
was
about paring down ideas and getting things focused.
It was hack work, but it was good training.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I agree. Well, I'm glad I did that.
It's out there, and I suspect that there's a potential movie in this book.
I hope so. It'll take a while since we have no publicist and we have no crew. I have no assistant.
Come on. Get out your checkbook. It's only $5,000. I mean, that's nothing, you know.
But I'm going to be working on it.
Okay. We will, we'll find out what happens.
Yes, we will.
This is a big world and anything can happen.
We never know anything.
You just...
Thank you for having me on, Bennett. It was lovely to see you again, sir.
Oh, it's been wonderful seeing you. The last time I talked to you was like 2002 or something. You know,
it's been a while.
And the last time I saw you, I went over to visit the Zappa Museum.
Yes.
Back in the days when we were both away from the Rhino.
That's right.
And I've just been listening to a podcast about Mokele Mbembe in the Congo, and the creationists are trying to find dinosaurs in the Congo because they think that will disprove evolution, and so the people in the Congo, what they're thinking of is like a 100-year-old idea of what dinosaurs were like, and so the people in the Congo. If they in the jungles, if they actually saw a rhino, they wouldn't know what it was because rhinos don't live in jungles. Rhinos live in the savanna, you know, in big wide open areas.
We should know this.
Exactly. It's all about rhino. Anyway, I'm going to say goodnight to Tom now, and thank you so much for coming here today.
You are so welcome, man. I'm glad I did.
And we'll talk again really soon.
Yes.
So here's traffic.
Prison by the way it could be. Left here on my own, or so it seems. I've got to leave before I start to scream. Someone's locked the door and took the key. You're feeling alright? I'm not feeling too good myself. Well, you're feeling alright? I'm not feeling too good.
myself. Well, boy, you sure took me for one big ride, and even now I sit and wonder why. But when I think of you, I start to cry. Just can't waste my time, I must keep trying. Gotta stop believing in all your lies, 'cause there's too much to do before I die. You're feeling alright? I'm not feeling too good myself. Well, you're feeling alright? I'm not feeling too good myself. Felt that way, but that was then and now it's today. Can't get up yet and so I'm here to stay, till someone comes along and takes my place with a different name, just a different face. You're feeling alright? I'm not feeling too good myself. Feeling all right. I'm not feeling too good myself.
And that, of course, is Traffic and Feeling All Right. And that was Tom Brown, H.T. Brown. And the name of the book is Summer of Love, My Ass. And stay tuned.